Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We've had some pretty cold days this winter, and today we're going to find out if those temperatures will have an effect on our insect population. We'll be talking with Phil Pelletieri in just a few minutes, as a matter of fact, about the world of insects, and you'll be able to join in with your questions and comments. But before we do that, I want to turn to Brandy Funk, who has joined us, Wisconsin Public Radio's own Brandy Funk, by the way. And she is here to help me tell you about investing a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening. Isn't that right, Brandy?
Yes, that is true. Thank you, Larry. I'm happy to be here with you and Phil. Excited that Phil's the guest today. Listener support makes up the single largest piece of the funding for programs that you count on, and that's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Last hour, we heard from, I believe, 13 new and returning members. So thank you very much for those pledges. Right now, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. And this is wonderful. It's up to $4,500. This generous match is from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including a member from Oshkosh, and it means that they'll match every dollar you give.
Exactly.
Up to 40. You could just do it all at once with $4,500.
Wouldn't that be slick?
That'd be slick.
Yes, it's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support for the programs you love. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for a long time, more than 100 years, because we're committed to quality. And since listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget, that quality is really possible thanks to you.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many others as well. When you give, you're a part of the quality you hear every day on WPR. Make a difference right now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And while you're at it, you can let the world know you're a WPR fan when you wear your cool new WPR t-shirt. I've got one on order. Ask for yours when you give $10 a month or more, or a one-time gift of $120. Your gift supports the programs you care about, and you can get the limited edition t-shirt. Starts with your gift at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing this drive. Pledge any amount and you could win a $500 gift card for a grocery store near you. You'll have five chances to win. There's a lot of good stuff you could buy with $500.
I would probably stock up on avocados.
I'd get all the little kitchen supplies. I'd buy lots of, like, small cooking appliances.
Wine.
Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the grocery card giveaway rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. You can't win if you don't enter, so make your pledge of any amount right now. Here's how.
I don't know if I'd spend $500 on avocados, but
That's a lot of guacamole,
but you know what? Each to his own or her own. You can pledge right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Brandy Funk. And we're here to tell you that listener support is the single biggest source of funding for WPR programs, the ones you rely on. That's why your support during this winter membership drive is so important. And I don't know, maybe your gift is 10 or 20 bucks a month, maybe it's 50, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And we know you value your time, and we value your time too. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Yeah, it's really quick and it's easy to do, and your gift right now really helps. So take the next few minutes to support the station you count on. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Our dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. We have a goose egg right now. Oh! We can do it. We have a ways to go, but we can get there. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of Wisconsin Public Radio will go twice as far.
And as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, your pledge, any amount, gets you entered in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card In fact, you'll have five chances to win, so a good time to pledge is right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And if you're a sustainer, you're automatically entered.
You can support the programs you value, and you can ask for the cool new WPR t-shirt when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's really easy to set up. It's convenient. You get ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And Brandy, it's always fun talking with you. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Yeah, I hope I will be back, yeah.
Well, in the meantime, we will look at the smiling face, or I will at least, and you will hear the smiling voice of our guest, Phil Pelletieri. Phil, an entomologist, distinguished faculty associate emeritus. He retired as head of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab in 2014. Hard to believe it's been that long. But he still knows his bugs, and if you have a question about insects that may be bugging you, or just maybe a general question about insects, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org. Certainly love to hear from you. And Phil, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Should I turn your microphone on? There we go. Now I've got your microphone on. It was great to have you along. We've had a number of listeners wonder if the very cold temperatures we've had this winter will have had any effect on insect populations.
To a very small degree at best. I mean, I always, you know, over the 40-some years now of chasing insects have sat. And, you know, one of my perspectives goes back to it used to be a lot colder than it is now. And different insects have different thresholds. But overall, since so many insects are in a biological state where they're really not active, or they are in sheltered sites that are not seeing the exposure that you might expect, you find that winter doesn't really have a big impact, I don't think, until we see things in the neighborhood of 30 below with those kind of temperatures. What always has been a bigger factor is if we get the kind of weather pattern that warms up enough to wake things up, and then we get a real cold push, that will have the biggest impact. So I always tell people I wait really more to the spring to get a good feel for what's happening.
Well, right away, Ray and Rhinelander has something for us, so let's go there. Ray, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, Phil, thank you very much for all you did for us in the department and science to let us know what's going on.
I appreciate that.
And there is so much controversy right now on deer ticks. As you well know, and all of us who do anything outside, they are everywhere. They are the only insect that comes out first in the spring and are still out even in the fall and partially early winter. Sometimes they think they're from a different planet. Little joke. But the seriousness of Lyme disease right now, American Disease Control thing, well, I don't know how they say that, the name of that term out of Atlanta, Georgia, don't they have that on the list as one of the top 10 serious diseases in America right now?
Oh, yeah, no question. And, you know, one of the things that I, aside from watching this unfold during my career, it was interesting, and we're going back about 7 or 8 years ago now, that the numbers that are reported in this state have to do with, you know, medical procedures, filling out paperwork. But the bottom line is what they figured is that was only reporting 10% of what we're seeing in a given state. And
wow.
So, and then the other interesting aspect is it seems every 2 or 3 years we're identifying another organism that the deer tick is capable of transmitting to humans. And so
right.
It really has, you know, the infectivity rates and the ticks are up. We've got new diseases. And so, you know, it is if you're an outdoor person, you really have to keep your guard up. Because we're in about 6 or 7 different organisms now that you potentially could pick up from deer ticks in Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. Ray, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. The brown marmorated stink bug, you know, we're seeing that a lot more and more in Wisconsin. Where's it been spotted so far?
Well, it's interesting. At Garden Expo, that was the dominant question that came in when I was working in the booth, which is surprising. That's a first. We have records in 16 counties. So it's still pretty much the southern part of the state. What is interesting that Madison, for whatever reason, is the hotbed. And where we're going through a transition is rather than people seeing maybe one or two a winter, people are reporting they're seeing three or four a week. And so everything's kind of pointing to a buildup. And my colleagues that work at the department, we're concerned about fruits, apples in particular, are quite susceptible, raspberries. And so we're just starting to get on that kind of agricultural issue with it. But the nuisance aspect of it's going up, and we only expect to continue. I mean, the first records were 2009 in our state. We're about 8 years out. And I'll be honest with you, it's been slower to progress than I thought. I teased that was one of the reasons I was retiring, because I knew it was coming. But on the other hand, it is a little bit disappointing to see that the populations are up. Some research is ongoing to try to identify some of the natural enemies, wondering if that's maybe what's slowing the establishment in the state. And that would be good news if it was going on. But again, the trends are definitely to increasing populations.
And so it can really cause some damage. Apples, you mentioned, strawberries and raspberries.
Yeah, it has a sucking mouth part, so the damage is rather subtle. In apples, you get this kind of real brownish, corky blemish by stink bug feeding. In raspberries, aside from discoloring the berry a little bit, there's a distasteful aspect to it. I don't know if they're introducing yeast or what other parts are involved with it. Tomatoes, it causes a symptom called ghost spot. And again, we're not getting a lot of reports about that, but if you look what happened out east, that was a significant aspect. Even soybeans had quite a bit of problem out there. We have not seen those indications here, but it's, I kind of tease for those people who have went through the various invasive wars in this state. If you imagine what Japanese beetle does to ornamental plants, this is kind of that way in fruits and vegetables.
Wow.
And then the winter aspect is much like multicolored Asian lady beetle that invades people's houses. Well, that's what brown marmorated stink bug does in the winter. So it's a double whammy.
And when you mentioned raspberries, I thought of another insect that's creating some real problems with raspberries.
Yeah, the spotted wing Drosophila, which is a type of fruit fly that comes to us from Asia, has really been a major headache, to the point that commercial raspberry growers, because of the high maintenance it takes to try to keep the critters out of your berries, have given up. It's just not worth their effort. And in one of the things, so many insects seem to kind of catch things just about the time it is ready to pick. Well, this little stinker is getting in the berries before they even color. And that makes it very difficult. And so people are not aware of it. They pick their berries, they've got little white worms in them. Or the other side, you have to spray multiple times to try to keep it out. And I think most of us would prefer not to have to spray our produce. So that really is a big disappointment.
I want to go back to Lyme disease for just a minute, because Marianne emailed to ask if you remember when Lyme disease was starting to impact in the U.S. and they dropped cotton balls with something that affected mice.
Yeah, there's two interesting strategies, and these are still available. One was to use cotton balls treated with permethrin, which is the same spray we put on our clothing for tick control. But here the mice would take it back to their nests and basically self-treat. And because immatures have a preference for mice and other rodents, including chipmunks, but that's also where they acquire the disease. So they start their life clean, but once they feed on an infected mouse, they're infected, and then they have the opportunity. The other strategy is to use a rodent bait box. You bring it in, and we basically treat it with the same chemical we put on our dogs. We call it frontline on dogs, but in this case, it's fipronil. And that makes the fur of the mice toxic to the ticks. So that's another strategy that's being used. And it's interesting. Last week, I was up an old dear friend of mine who used to be a technical director for a pest control company, is now involved with an international firm that is getting involved with vector management. And so they're going after it two-pronged. They're going after mosquito control, but they're also going after tick control because they consider this a really huge potential market. And again, Lyme disease is the thing that's pushing it here. And there is a Lyme-like disease in Europe. And it really is quite intriguing to watch these things unfold.
It really is. You know, once in a while I'll find an insect around in the building, and if I don't know what it is, I always take it to Brandy Funk because she's the bug lady here at Wisconsin Public Radio. She'll have the answer. She just walked in now. She doesn't have any bugs in her hand, but she's got some help for me. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like the world of insects that we do with Phil Pelletieri so often. Your support makes this happen because listener support is the single largest piece of the budget. So I hope you'll give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Brandy, there's a special inducement.
Mm-hmm. We have a dollar for dollar match still in effect right now from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including a member from Oshkosh. That means your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, we get such good guests on the Ideas Network because they know that you will ask great questions and they won't be interrupted by commercials as well. Your support makes this possible. You're the most reliable part of our budget. So please do give now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
And if you've never given to WPR before, step up and give right now. You'll be funding the programs you and many others benefit from every day. Many first-time donors give $100 or $10 a month. The amount is up to you. The important thing is that you make your first-ever gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You may not be thinking about t-shirts in February, but the new WPR t-shirt, two-tone orange on a dark gray shirt, soft, stylish, is waiting for you. Where will you show it off?
If I'm going to meet a new group of people, I would definitely wear my WPR t-shirt because that's a really good icebreaker.
This is a t-shirt that I would probably wear at a beer festival. This is a t-shirt you'd wear to impress.
Yeah, any sort of family affair. Everyone loves to show off their Wisconsin pride.
The 2018 WPR t-shirt. It's appropriate to wear in so many places. Don't miss out. Get yours now when you make a gift of $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. Larry Mueller here with Brandy Funk asking for your support during this winter membership drive. Because? Why? Well, because it makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. And if your gift is $10 or $20 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, that is really the right amount.
Yes, and a great way to share your passion for WPR, not just wearing the fancy and awesome cool t-shirt, but is by becoming a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle with a pledge of $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year or more. We rely on member support, your support, to make great radio.
Gifts of $100 a month are important for our future. They help us stay strong and continue to grow. And with your leadership gift, you can do that. And I'll give you the secret handshake, too, as to how to get into the meetings. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
You've probably heard about our monthly giving program. It's becoming really popular. Nearly half of our members are now sustainers, and it's easy to become a sustainer. All you have to do is set up automatic monthly gifts, bank account, or credit card.
And in addition to funding the programs you love, here's another great reason to sign up for our ongoing monthly gifts. Sustainers are automatically entered in the grocery card drawing we're offering this drive, and future drawings as well, same will apply. So you can become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Brandy, how are we doing here?
We're doing well. We're not there yet. Our dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. We have about $3,000 left to raise. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
Yeah, that $120 gift will turn into $240 if you do it right now. And I love this $500 grocery gift card idea, this drawing. I don't get, you know, I always pledge, but I don't get to, if I won, they wouldn't give it to me.
Nope.
But they will give it to you. We're going to pick five winners, sustainers. You're automatically entered, as I said earlier. And if you're not a sustainer yet, pledge right now, WPR.org. Or phone 888-202-2552.
Support the programs you care about and show off your WPR pride. Ask for the 2018 WPR t-shirt when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Brandy, I'm kind of on the sustainer train here. If you're a sustainer member, if you're a sustaining member, I really do want to thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by maybe add $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. Taking a look at the world of insects with Phil Pelletieri, retired as head of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. It's always fun to talk with him. And talking a little bit about home invaders, those bugs that get into your house, but other insect questions as well. Call in 800-642-1234. Let's go back to the phones. And Roberta in Janesville. Roberta, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I would like to ask about the life cycle of that brown marmorated stink bug. When they come in the house, I mean, they're here now. See one every day on a window or something. Do they come in as full grown, or did those germinate from eggs, or what's their life cycle is my question.
Sure. Good question.
So everything that we see all winter long is associated with the adults that came in during the fall, and typically expect that sometime in October. So very much like box elder bugs and some of those other fall invaders, and typically they get in the attic space or the wall space, and then when things warm up, they start moving around, and they come through light fixtures and, you know, underneath around baseboards, any place they can squeeze through. So it gives you the false impression that they're continually breeding, but it's not. As they said, this is all fall access, and then finally when we get into April and it warms up for good, either they will have died in the walls, which gives us other problems because dead insects begot other insects, unfortunately. But the ones that are do survive will move out and start breeding in the summer, and we see one big wave of them, basically. And that's where we see a lot of the damage. And then again in the fall, you get their children coming in to invade.
There you go.
Well, I'm glad they weren't born here then. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Roberta. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And speaking of emails, Matt in Wausau emailed to say he's been finding hundreds of carpenter ants both crawling and dying in his house, started late last fall. What should he do to rid them? He's not a fan of pesticides. And this does seem kind of like the time of the year we start seeing them more active.
Yeah, so what's significant? Now, the first question is make sure it's not associated with firewood, because you could bring them in that way. But it is unnatural to see any carpenter activity from the 1st of November, I would say almost till probably the 1st of April. If you do see even one or two ants, it suggests that the nest is in the house. And, you know, as we talked before, the name is deceptive because they don't eat wood, but they often nest in wood that has been softened and has other kinds of decay problems, and they get blamed for it. So the good news is your house doesn't fall down, but they can be a real stinker to hunt down. And the one direction to go, there has been some changes as far as what's available, and there are some commercial products that are really quite effective. But if you don't want to have the outside of your house sprayed, they do sell baits. And what I would caution you here is it's worth going and getting specific baits made for carpenter ants. Usually this means you got to go on the internet. You don't see these things in the hardware store. The baits are most effective if they're used in the early part of the season when the ants are raising their young. A little early for that now. What we tend to see at this time of the year is the ants are looking for water because they're going to bring it back to the nest and try to increase the humidity to make the environment more favorable for raising young a month or two down the road. A month or two down the road, all of a sudden they got all these little mouths to feed, and that's when they tend to work on the baits. It's a little pelleted bait. You can put it in containers, you know, so that really nothing has access. And the idea is the ants pick it up, take it back, and feed each other. And the most important part is they feed the queen. There is one, generally speaking, reproductive member in the whole colony, and she's responsible for everything. So if you can kill her, they cannot recover. So that's what I always talk about. You know, the easy thing to say is find the nest and treat the queen. The trouble is the detective work it takes to figure. Now, what I've often used as a bit of a gauge is if you see the ants in January, it can't be an outside wall. The walls are too cold. If it's 50 degrees or less, 55 degrees, they can't move. That suggests something in the interior, hollow core door or something like that, that might be a problem. If the ants start to pick up when things warm up in the end of February and March, that's an outside wall usually, whereas the outdoor ants aren't going to start coming into the house until we at least get into middle April when we got consistent temperatures above 60 degrees or so.
Todd in De Pere has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Todd. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about... bug that I found after I was deer hunting. We harvested a deer, and shortly after field dressing the deer, as little as 10 minutes, well, 10 minutes to a half hour, I'll say, all over the entrails was a greenish, almost tiny wasp-looking bug with wings, and they appeared to be mating in the they were in the entrails of the deer. And I was wondering what they were and why they would be doing that, if they were laying larvae in the entrails. And if they were, what does that do to have an effect on any predators that may have been cleaning up the entrails after that?
Sure. So was this a bow deer when it was warmer, or was this the deer gun season when it's colder?
It was a warmer. It was gun season, but it was a warmer day.
The thing about it is that the kind of insects I normally associate with carrion would be pretty much inactive by that late. And so I wonder if this is somebody else that didn't have, you would not normally associate with decaying organic matter per se, or, you know, fresh stuff. And so, I'm kind of fishing here a little bit, but it sounds more something like a, you know, a lake fly or some other midge that was present. And I don't know if it was the moisture level or the heat of the entrails that might have attracted it. But I just can't think of anything that would normally attack something that late. It's a tough time of the year for an insect to lay its eggs and expect them to develop, because it's going to freeze right away. I mean, just like I said, most of our dynamic insects associated with carrion have long since gone into a winter hibernation or a state that wouldn't be active, because, as I said, it's just not a good time of year to try to raise young.
It could be possibly I'm confusing two deer here, because my son did harvest one during bow season. Maybe it was that one.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that's throwing me a little bit is green. The color greenish is, I just can't think of all the critters I know that are associated with carrion, anything that would fit that color pattern. You know, most things are maggoty like, so they're kind of creamy white. There's some beetles that come in that would be rather dark. And even in the wasp group, you know, some of the yellow jackets and whatnot are protein feeders, and so they are associated with carrion. But usually, when you get about the 15th of October, their colonies have pretty much collapsed. And so, as I said, I'm just a little perplexed and thinking it's just more of a coincidental type thing. It's, if you had a picture of it.
I did collect some, and I put them in a little plastic envelope, if I can find them. I'm above my workbench in my shed, and if I can find them.
Send them down. So, PJ is running the lab now, PJ Leash, the address for the diagnostic lab is 1630 Linden Drive, and the university zip is 53706, and he'd be more than happy to take a peek and see if we can solve the riddle.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call, Todd. Let's go to Patty in Madison next. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Informing us all about insects. I've got a problem with little tiny ants in my house, and maybe... I just caught the end of your discussion with someone else. They're about, I'm trying to measure one here, 2 or 3 millimeters long, and they have flared up. Normally I see them a little later, like in June. Anything?
With wings or not wings?
No wings.
Okay, good. So guessing here a little bit, but I really the solution now is easier. When I first started my career, we didn't have some of these options. But so again, much like the earlier call, there's no way these are outdoor ants. These are something that is in a warmed environment, whether it's underneath the slab, you know, the cement, because the soil could be warm there, or in the walls. My first guess is pavement ants. But what really is probably more important to try to pay attention to is what kind of food preferences they have. And the way ants go, for the most part, it's going to either be protein or sugar. So you can put a little bit of oil out on a piece of waxed paper. You can put a little honey or something similar. And once you determine what they like, and there's some ants that like both, but what we're fishing for here is, again, the best direction is to use baits so they can kind of self-treat themselves. But you got to make sure the bait matches the ant's food preferences. And, you know, so I think with that, I said pay a little science experiment here, see what they like, and then make sure the baits you buy are formulated. And some of the baits are using boric acid as a toxic, and other baits are using some hormones. So there tend to be much less toxic options than some of the sprays that we have here, and really more effective because, again, as long as you get bait acceptance, we know that the product is getting into the colony and we have a good chance of taking the queens out. The thing about pavement ants, it is multiple nests, multiple queens. I mean, that's, they're, you know, in the entomology world, we refer to non-native ants as tramp ants. And one of the characteristics of tramp ants is you can see them any time of the year, but more importantly is typically they have multiple queens. And believe it or not, we have some populations and species that we don't even know where the males are. They're all females that continuously breed. So they're really quite a challenge, but the baits, if used, and there are some reasonable baits on the general shelves of hardware stores and the like, but when you get real serious again, there are specialized formulated baits that you can get through the internet made for specific species or groups of species, and they tend to be a little bit better, but then you have to go through the bother, of course, of ordering it, having it delivered.
Phil Pelletieri, our guest, talking about some of the challenges associated with identifying and treating some of the insects. Brandy Funk back with me, and I tell you what, we have a challenge of our own here as we take a look at our membership drive for Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and it's your gift of any amount that makes these discussions possible. Listener support, single largest piece of the budget here, and that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
And you've been enjoying the conversation today about all sorts of bugs and bug maintenance with Phil Pelletieri. WPR is listener supported. That means when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this show and many more shows possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes and make your pledge.
Have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect now. It's a great time to pledge because the 9XM Leadership Circle members, including a member from Oshkosh, double every gift you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double the impact of your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Support the programs you love right now and get a cool new WPR t-shirt. It's a two-tone orange design on a dark gray shirt, and it shows how Wisconsin is at the heart of everything we do. Ask for it with your gift of $10 a month or more, or a one-time gift of $120 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Bill from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too. I think it's important because things are said and done on the radio that are important, that need to be said, that we don't get on any other radio station. I listen to it all the time. It's on the car, it's on the radio in the morning when we get up, and it's on all day practically, and it's just the way we live. I know that the money is going to be well used. It's a valuable service, and I just feel good about it.
You know what? I feel good when I give, too, and I bet you will, too. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Brandy Funk. raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. And I don't care if your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. I appreciate, we all appreciate, and we count on your gift.
These days, it's easy to spend a dollar a day or even more on things that are a part of your routine, like a cup of coffee or a snack from the vending machine.
You might think about the news, the information, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe a buck a day, that comes out to $30 or $31 a month. Maybe that's the right amount for you. Give a dollar a day right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Support the programs you enjoy every day.
And Larry, guess what? We met our match. Thank you so much for those who have contributed and for the donors and members who gave their pledge challenge. Thank you so much. We actually are four shy of meeting our pledge goal. So if we can get four more donations by noon, that would be fantastic. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support WPR, and it will go. Oh, thank you. I was going to read the part I was talking about meeting the match. We met the match. Let's get four more.
And we're good. You know what I wanted to talk about? I wanted to talk about the amount that you pledge, and it's any amount. You get entered in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. In fact, you'll have five chances to win. And so I think it's a perfect time to pledge right now. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And I keep bringing up sustainers because I want you to know that you're automatically entered.
You can support the programs you value, and you can ask for the cool new WPR t-shirt when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And again, if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. Easy to set up, a convenient, ongoing monthly donation situation from your bank or from your credit card. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We are answering all your questions about insects today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with Phil Pelletieri, entomologist, a retired head of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Always great to have him along. And Dennis in Two Rivers has a question for you, Phil, so let's go right there. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, thank you. I've got a problem with some yellow jackets. About 2 years ago, I knocked their hive down that was outside my utility building. It's about 20 feet up, so I can't reach it with a ladder because I don't have a ladder that tall, but I knocked it down. Last year, I noticed they were coming from within the vent, so they've got inside. And I've used a long-handled squeegee to spread some full-strength pine oil up there. Apparently, it irritates them, but they just don't take the hint. They're not wanted.
Well, so the interesting thing is those are two separate colonies because everything starts from scratch in the spring. They do not reutilize their nest. And, you know, one of the ways to look at it is if they're active in an area that really you don't have to get close to, it probably isn't worth the risk of getting them annoyed. And so, as I said, it was kind of a coincidence that they were in a close proximity. One of the things that is changing for us in a good portion of the state is in the last 3 or 4 years, the European paper wasp has moved in. It looks just like a regular yellow jacket. It's a little bit longer and skinnier. If you were to see the nest, you could see the little cells in it. It's not an envelope nest, but it's, you know, open. I often call them umbrella wasps because of that. But the thing about the European paper wasp, it's notorious for hiding its nests in places you can't see. So rather than the overhangs like our native paper wasp, this is under vents and the like. Uh-huh. I got zapped in my own house because I was up checking one of my roof vents and stuck my hand underneath it. And the minute I got stung, I said, "You're smarter than this, Phil. This is just not smart." But again, it was in a place that really didn't pose me any threat. Now, even when they go in the walls, the worst thing I find people do is to plug the holes without treating them, and then that forces the wasp into the living space, and that's not what we want. Usually figure by about the 1st of November, they have died out. Now, if there's a hole that they were going in last year, it's well worth this spring when it warms up to plug the hole then, when we know that they're not active, but you're basically stopping access for them. But again, in a roof vent that's that high, I don't think I would really worry that much about them, because they'll just pretty much come and go. They have no reason to come into your living space unless you force them to. And I'm even a little concerned with the pine oil that might do it. I mean, it might just
make
be
them mad.
Repellent enough to push them. And so, as I said, now if it's right outside your front door stoop, it's got to be dealt with, because the chance of somebody getting stung is pretty high then.
Good luck. Thanks a lot, Dennis, for calling. Don in Antioch, Illinois, will go to you next. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind today?
So thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've got little they look like small moths. When they're sitting on the wall, they're probably 1/3 of an inch long, maybe, and maybe a 1/16 inch wide. And we can't find out where they're coming from. I'm assuming they're hatching in the house someplace.
Mm-hmm.
We've pulled out the stove and refrigerator and empty cabinets and sprayed. And I have no idea what they are, but
sure,
they drive my family nuts, and the dog and cat are jumping up to catch them as they come by. Totally crazy.
Okay, so, you know, there's a handful of things it can be, but by far the most common is an animal we call the Indian meal moth, and it's a pest of grain-based products, including pet food. And if you were to find the source, you'd see little white worms, and you would see webbing. They often leave this webbing behind. What you're witnessing are the adults. The problem is if you bring them in on something, you know, a box of cereal or, again, a bag of pet food, they're notorious in getting into anything that you define as dried plant material. So rice, noodles, spices, potpourri, you know.
Anything
and just,
like and, that.
You know, you've got to be a detective here. You know, I always tell people spraying will not solve the problem generally, because if it's in a box of cereal, you're not going to spray the cereal. Throwing out what's infested, making sure that other goods they can get into are in containers that they can't have access to. So definitely more in a paper bag. I like, you know, plastic containers, that type of thing. And keep your eyes open. Generally speaking, if you saw most of them in the living room, that's not typical. I expect them to be in the kitchen next to the cupboard. So
yeah, the kitchen is hooked up to the living room. It's all one big,
okay,
big area.
Now, the one thing that might complicate problems when people have pets is I have seen cases where historically, mice have been a problem in the house. The darn mice steal the pet food. They stash it in the walls. The mice are then eventually controlled, but we still have the pet food there. If the meal moths find it, now we've got a breeding site that we can't get to. So I'm hoping that's not your case. But for now, check everything that is again, dried plant material. This would be a Christmas wreath made out of walnuts that's stored in the basement, it could be. But more typically, you go through the cupboard, and you generally find something you don't use up very often, you know, something that takes months to go through. That's going to be more likely the source than something new. And as I said, if it's been a problem for you for a while, what I'm a little concerned about is they might have found access to more than the original product they came in with.
Yeah, there you go. Keep looking and keep searching, Don. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Cal in Menominee, Michigan, actually. It's your turn now. Hi, Cal.
Hi. I'm calling from Menominee. My wife and I are at hunting camp watching the deer and animals and the birds. And listening to your program. We love listening to your program.
Thank you.
I got two things. One, with ants. You can buy 20 mulatine borax at your hardware store or grocery store, the stuff you use in your laundry detergent if you want, and you can sprinkle that down where you know the ants are, and I don't know if they ingest it, but they get in it, and they bring it back to their nest, and it kills them because it dries them out. You can also put it in water and liquefy it, and you can spray it on the outside of the house, and that takes care of ants. Now, according to Benjamin Franklin's writings, he says you can also put cornmeal down, and the ants will eat that, but they can't digest it, and that kills them that way. So that's what I have to tell you about on ants. Well, and you can go outside with it if you got an ant hill or mounds. You sprinkle it on the mound, and it'll kill the whole big mound. But if you put it too much down, it'll also kill the grass in that area, but it'll come back. The other thing I want to talk about is the Lyme disease. I don't know, 18 or so years ago, I had a series of 3 Lyme disease shots, and I think they took them off the market because a couple people had some adverse effects. But that's something that somebody could look into again to see if that's still available, because it protects you from getting Lyme disease.
Yeah.
The Lyme disease thing, as far as I'm aware, it is not on the market right now. They weren't having enough people take advantage of it, and again, some of the legal issues that were involved. The borates, you know, what I'll add to it is that, you know, ants are liquid feeders, and boric acid will kill them if you can get it in. So the powder is a little bit more difficult because they often will not be interested. In fact, we do know if the borate level is too high, it's a repellent. So that might be one of the effects you see is when you put it out, they just don't want to go across it, and it looks like they're inactive. There are commercial baits that have borates in them, very successful. Terra ant poison is the classic one that people will get, which is a sugar-based bait. And again, if the ants pick it up and start feeding each other, it is one of the ways of controlling the problem. Those outside big nests I find very difficult because the trouble is the queen's 2 or 3 feet deep in the ground, and usually anything we try on the surface, it may look like we're quieting them down, but it really doesn't get to them. So, yeah, definitely borates are available. You get into a little bit of a tough thing when you buy things that are not labeled for what's going on. I mean, we've used this example for soaps. You know, we know soaps kill insects. And one of my favorites, this goes back years when Larry and I were doing the show, and one of the favorite recipes for box elder bugs from a colleague in Iowa State was a half a cup of Tide laundry detergent to a gallon of water, spray it on it, and it's a contact kill. And when we were doing the show, somebody called up and said, I tried Cheer and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Well, it's different chemistry.
Yeah.
When you buy the stuff that's made for the purpose, it's the right stuff. So the insecticidal soap, the same with the borates. The stuff that's formulated as baits, it's got the right concentration. It's not so much that it's a repellent. And so you got to be a little careful with home remedies. Some of them work. The cornmeal one, I will tell you scientifically, we find it doesn't work at all. I've heard that all through my career as a possibility, but it doesn't work.
Well, Don, Cal, thank you so much for calling. And thanks a lot for listening in Menominee, Michigan. I'm hoping you and your wife are having a good time listening today. I always have a good time when Brandy Funk stops by because
Larry.
Along with being a great insect specialist, she's a party gal. She likes to have a good time, and we always have fun when Brandy's in with the crowd. And that's why it's fun to have me with her to talk with you about our membership drive. It's up to you. You provide the single largest source of funding here at WPR, and this drive is your chance to support all the programs you enjoy. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-552.
And you've been enjoying today's program with Phil about bugs, and it was reminding me that I had a visit with a donor last week, and she said to me, I love WPR because everything I hear is of substance. And this program is definitely fitting into that perfectly. So I wanted to say also, WPR is listener supported. That means that when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this show and many more shows possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes right now and make your pledge.
I hope you'll do that. Rebecca from Madison says, I listen to WPR daily in my office. It's a calming presence in the chaos that is everyday work life. Thank you so much. Daniel from Racine says, value of the service and the variety of the programs is why I give. Well, what about you? If you haven't given yet, now would be the time to do it. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
We've probably all had this happen. We spend money on something and then hardly ever use it.
Dining room chairs because I eat in front of the TV more often than I should.
I think I bought a $5 pair of wireless headphones once, thinking, how bad can they be? They were pretty bad.
Decorative holiday towels.
Unlike some investments, your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio is a good one, one you'll get value from every day. Make your gift to support the programs you count on right now. Here's how.
Well, it's easy to do. You just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with my partner, Brandy Funk. And when you become a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took an important first step. I hope you'll take that next step and become a financial supporter.
When you become a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took that important first step. Now take the next step and become a financial supporter.
It's important because WPR relies on listener support, and it's easy to donate, decide how much you'd like to give. Let's say it's $10 a month or $120, a great starting point. And then make your pledge. Just takes a few minutes at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Time flies, as we know, and maybe it's been longer than you realize since you last gave to WPR. We're asking you to keep your membership active.
Think of your support of WPR like you think of other services you rely on and pay for, like internet or your phone. You can renew your support of WPR right now, an ongoing monthly gift. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Well, we have a couple minutes till we get to the top of the hour, but Larry, I wanted to officially say thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone who has donated. We met our match, so I want to also thank the people who provided that challenge, which are 9XM Leadership Circle members, including a member from Oshkosh. As well, I want to thank the 8 new members that we discovered.
We added to our last hour, so
thank you.
You know what I wanted to add, though, because even if you haven't added yet, there's still some incentive for you to add right now, because in addition to funding the programs, your pledge of any amount gets you entered in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card, and we're going to pick 5 winners and sustainers. You're automatically entered. So if you're not a sustainer yet, you can pledge right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Support the programs you care about and show off your WPR pride. Brandy and I are going to be showing off our pride with our WPR T-shirts. We've both contributed more than $120. You can do it at $10 a month or $120. We will be back with our guest right after the news, so stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Phil Pelletieri, an entomologist extraordinaire, talking the world of insects with him. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Matt in Wausau, we've been talking a little bit about carpenter ants, and he saw hundreds of them crawling and dying in his house.
And the dying part is what, I apologize for not addressing, but that's a sign, honestly, to me, that there's a disease issue going on, and the colony is dying out on its own. You just normally wouldn't expect to see a lot of ants unless something is not working right for them. And Matt had said he prefers not to use chemicals, so I think that's not the case. Now, again, he may have done a little baiting with some of the ant poisons you get at the grocery store, and that may be playing into it. So that's a good sign. There's something not working for the ants to see all those bodies. They get rid of them. You know, it's honestly the same as bees. When they have disease members, they get rid of them because of the potential threat. So they've kind of evolved to try to this hygiene, this cleanliness to get away from those kind of problems.
And in Wana Key emailed to say she got the dreaded lice has been found in your classroom letter from her daughter's class this week. She's heard you address this in the past, but she needs a refresher on the issue and best treatments.
So the first thing is don't overreact. I mean, if I look back historically, I've had people that have sent out their curtains for dry cleaning and all kinds of expenses that really have got nothing to do with the head lice problem. It's an on-person problem to begin with. And so what we worry about is things that have close contact with the head. Hats, combs, those kind of items, you know, potentially pillowcases. And honestly, if the things can be washed, that kills head lice in that instance. Yeah. So, you know, sheets, you got to worry about that. As I said, be careful with sharing combs, you know, because that is a way you can transfer it from one member of the household to others. Now, one of the reasons we're in this problem is that the populations have become resistant to many of the shampoos that were made for killing head lice. And, you know, this has been probably now 20 years that's been documented. And this is a worldwide problem. And so, you know, I knew when we were in trouble when I had a mom that was a nurse who had treated her child twice and couldn't solve it. And you knew she was following directions.
Yeah.
And the other thing about lice is that really most products don't kill eggs. So it's important to have two treatments. One, and then you follow it up again about 2 weeks later to kill anything that's hatched. Now, here's where we get into a little bit of a sticky area. I have found through reports, experiences, and whatnot, that people that have used olive oil and other natural oils have had very good control, leaving it on the hair for about 8 to 10 hours. The problem is that it's not officially registered as such. You can't go to the pharmacy, generally. There is a licorice-based herbal product and the like, and there are some interesting herbal products, but I go back to olive oil being as readily accessible, and people don't have allergies and the like, and what you're using it as is a suffocant. They can't breathe through it, and so that's why it has to be left on for quite some time. So I would suggest you can go on the internet, get some background on this. Officially, I cannot recommend it. That's because it's not labeled for that site, but natural oils to me are easily accessible, are not expensive, and they work. And as I said,
why not then?
The first case I had of this was years ago where a mom used corn oil. This is before. And where she was, her thinking was, well, we use oils on fruit trees to suffocate insects. Why not? And she tried the corn oil. It worked great. Unfortunately, it was rough on her hair, she said, but yeah, it got things done. So there are some avenues, but in particular, I'll go back to the biological importance of in the treatments you buy over the counter. Read carefully because you're probably going to have to put a second application on.
Let's go to Jennifer in Green Bay next. Jennifer, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, I'm not in Green Bay.
Oh, sorry. Where are you?
I'm Jennifer. I'm in Whitewater.
Oh, yes. Whitewater. Okay.
I'm really sad to hear that all of the calls have to do with extermination of these creatures, that there's other ways one can live with them, and they're incredibly intelligent. I've done research with ants and have found that ants, hornets, spiders, various of them that are, you know, they get into your territory, but they negotiate. If you're very patient, and you can actually redirect where they go so that they won't come into the places that are inconvenient for you.
Yeah.
I was able to avoid having them in the summer. See, when it rains, even if the pavement ants, they're living sort of in the bottom of the foundation. They're not going to bother anybody. But then when it rains, they get flooded out. They come up into the house, and everybody's worried, oh, there's these ants. If you provide them with an alternative source of food down in an area that's not a problem, they'll go there. They're very happy with that. They won't have to come in there looking for food. I've had a nest of hornets that have lived in the porch various places, and if they get too close to where the walkway is or anything, I just get a long-handled stick and drop the nest into a bag and relocate them. But you have to do that before it gets really large. I've never been stung.
Yeah, you're raising some interesting points here, Jennifer, and I think it goes back to your comment to the caller with hornets or I think whatever. They were high up. You said leave them alone.
Yeah. You know, I think in most cases, if people had any concept of how many insects are really crawling around the yard, it would both be scary. But on the other hand, it shows you how so many insects can just function and do their daily stuff and not bother you. It's physically impossible, I would tell people, to get rid of all the ants and other critters in their yard, and it would not be what you want, you know, whether you talk for pollination or recycling, but insects are very important in the environment. Where we cross the line for many people is there's this association that if insects are around, they're going to transmit diseases and the like, and it really, that in most cases is not realistic. On the other hand, as I said, I can see where people get disturbed about ants on the countertop. Now, we had mentioned earlier the person that used the borax as a way of kind of repelling the ants. That's what a lot of stuff. Mint oil, there's a lot of natural products that you've put on your doorsill. The ants won't cross. Mm-hmm. You're not controlling them. You're just convincing them to stay outside. And, of course, you use the example of giving them food. You know, and that's most of the time what they're coming in for is looking for food. So aside from keeping things reasonably clean, that will lessen it. But the other side is if you're comfortable with it, giving them an alternative food source will, as you mentioned, redirect them.
Yeah, absolutely. Jennifer, thank you so much for calling. Good reminder. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Jeff emailed us a photo and wondering what this brown
Okay, it's definitely a stink bug. I'm a little, I wish I could have seen the front, you know, the top half instead of the bottom half. One would guess it's marmorated stink
bug. That's just what I thought.
But there are other stink bugs in the state. And so, you know, if you only saw one or two, you know, it opens the option for one of these other species. If you're finding handfuls of them in the house this time of the year, that's the classic way marmorated stink bug functions. And so I would suspect that's probably it. What you will see if you look closely is a banding in the antenna. You'll also see a checkerboard-like marking on the sides of the body from the top surface. Those are a couple of the characters that we use to identify that up close. If it's got a different color pattern, then, as I said, it may be one of the native stink bugs.
Somebody else asked about citronella ants, and I'm sure most people, maybe they've heard of them, maybe not.
Citronella is a very, you know, clean, lemony smell.
Yeah.
And this particular ant, if crushed or even if they're active, give you that. I mean, people used to laugh at me on the phone when I said, do the ants smell at all? Because there is one called an odorous house ant that smells kind of like rancid coconut, believe it or not. But citronella ants have this very distinctive lemony smell. You usually don't see them. They don't come in the house for food, but they like to nest under slabs. So at this time of the year, what you will see are these ants with wings. They're usually a dark brown. The workers are more yellowish in color. And as I said, if crushed, they give a yellow give a lemony smell. They go away within 3 or 4 days of the swarming. I mean, so other than vacuuming up what's in the basement and maybe sealing the crack, that's all that really needs to be done. And outdoors, as I said, we don't really pay them much attention because their basic food source is the honeydew that's secreted by aphids.
Rod and Weyerhaeuser has something for us. We'll get to Rod in just a minute. There were some other what other insects are starting to become more active right now as we go into spring?
Box elder bugs, cluster flies are two of those fall invaders that we tend to see. Again, I go back to the common and firewood. I used to see a lot of interesting things that come in, and you know, it's tricky when you store firewood indoors because what's happened is the warmer conditions are waking everybody up because they think it's spring. So, you know, that's the other thing. If you see some odd, weird critters crawling around, and some of them rather big, a couple inches long, some of the longhorn wood boring beetles, as I said, check your firewood pile. They're nuisances, you know, other than making a little bit of a mess and the like. There's no reason to worry about your house falling down because of these things. But that's one of the dilemmas of storing too much wood in for too long a period of time is some of the insects will wake up.
Now we'll go to Rod in Weyerhaeuser. Rod, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you, Larry. Yeah, I was good show. I was just going to say, like that lady was saying previous to this about, you know, worrying about insects all the time. You know, you leave them alone, most of the time they do leave you alone. I mean, a hornet or something will nail you once in a while, yeah. I think once a sting, once in a blue moon, they probably is good for you. But anyhow, I was just wondering if those wasps or hornets, the vicious ones, hurt honeybees.
Okay, so.
And I also had a comment.
Yeah, okay. We'll get complaints from beekeepers, especially in the late summer, of yellow jackets going in and stealing honey from the hive. Usually that suggests that the honeybees are, the colony's quite weak because they usually won't tolerate it. So it's kind of a war, and if they're weak, the yellow jackets are successful. But other than that, there's not a lot of competition out there because hornets, again, some of them feed on people food. Honeybees have no interest in that. They're basically just nectar collectors and pollen collectors.
Very interesting. And you had a comment too, Rod.
Yeah, I was going to comment about the ants. I eat them. And I'm not making this up. I mean, if there's ants on the counter, like the average black, medium-sized black ants, which normally you don't have them on the counter, but the little sand ants, them little red ones, I just take my hand, wipe them, I'll lick them off my hand or put them on something if I'm frying them. They're 100% protein, and I'm not making this up. I see where they're talking about eating more insects all the time because of the population growth, and you don't have to do anything, open land for insects or nothing.
Well, you know, we were just talking about an entomologist at the UW-Madison who has done a lot of work. He's passed on now.
Dr. Gene DeFouliart, which he was a medical entomologist by training, so he worked with mosquitoes and ticks and those kind of things, but towards the end of his career was very interested in utilizing insects as food culturally, it's a very difficult hurdle to get over in Western cultures, but in many parts of the world, numerous insects are eaten. They're very high protein. In fact, they're more efficient at converting, you know, plant material to protein than any other animals we have out there. And so we'll see down the road. As I said, it's kind of coming in. It's more of a novelty for most people, and most a lot of people just can't get past that thought. But some very interesting research going on as far as converting plant material and the like into basically protein that whether animals or people could use.
Rod, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim wondered if you how's it going with your book? You're writing a book.
Honestly, I can say this has been a productive winter because my rule tends to be if there's snow on the ground, I write. If not, and so I'm plugging away, and I'm real hopeful. I keep on thinking I'm there, and it's kind of like every time you look around the corner, there's more stuff to do. But we're getting there.
Always a pleasure, Phil. Phil Pelletieri, who is a now retired boy since 2014. Time flies. He's a former head of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Always a pleasure for him. And I'm not sure if he ever has to come and ask Brandy Funk any questions about bugs. She's the go-to gal here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Mm-hmm. I would do Phil proud.
She would do Phil proud when it comes to that. And she's also good at talking about our winter membership drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations, and we count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
Yes, indeed. I would like to share two comments. Tony from South Milwaukee says, I need the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you, Tony.
And Chase from DePere says, Larry and his shows inspire me. Thank you so much. Listener support is the single largest piece of the funding that makes this show and all the others that you enjoy possible. And that's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Last hour, we heard from 28 members. Thank you so much for your pledges. Our goal in this half hour is to get... What is it? 10. We've got a goal of 10. We've got one. So mm-hmm. We've got 9 more to go.
We can do it. WPR is listener powered, and that means that these goals are important. They help us stay on track to fund the programs you count on. Do your part now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll be supporting independent WPR programs, and you'll be entered in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card.
So what does the public radio mean? What does it mean when we say public radio? Well, it means listener-supported radio.
While we do appreciate business contributions and federal and state tax dollars, listener support is the single largest source of WPR's budget. Your contribution of any amount really matters at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can get on the bandwagon right now if you're a WPR fan. When you wear your cool new WPR T-shirt, ask for yours when you give. I think you have to give $10 a month at least, or you can do a one-time gift of $120 or more. And your gift supports the programs you care about, and you get the limited edition T-shirt. Starts with your gift at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. I think I've got everyone that we've ever had.
I think I do, too. A friend of mine calls me the walking WPR billboard. I can't help it.
Oh, man.
You might not have a life coach or a personal trainer or Phil the Bug Guy on speed dial, and that's okay. When you listen to the Ideas Network, you get great advice from all kinds of experts. And what's the cost to you? Well, you get to choose. The Ideas Network is your source for helpful information, so support it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And maybe you're interested in playing a larger role as a WPR supporter. The 9XM Leadership Circle is a growing group of listeners who contribute $100 a month or more to support Wisconsin Public Radio programs.
Leadership Circle members want to make sure Wisconsin Public Radio programming will be here today, tomorrow, and well into the future. Increase your support to WPR. Join the 9XM Leadership Circle today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. I was thinking about that last little spot that we played, and one of the things I really enjoy doing is driving around the state. And when I drive to northern Wisconsin, to Bayfield, for example, for Bayfield and Bloom, I can have WPR on the whole way, so I get like 5-6 hours straight of listening, and I love it, and I hope you do as well. We're asking for your support during our winter membership drive because it what makes the WPR programs you and I rely on possible, and your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And Mary from Chippewa Falls says, I listen to WPR every day. My favorite is Larry Mueller's programs, a variety of topics that are fun and interesting.
Thank you, Mary.
Yes, Mary. We are looking for two more pledges in the next about 5 minutes. Thank you.
No, actually, we're looking for 8 more.
I did my math incorrectly. Thank you, Larry.
We're looking for 8 more.
Yes, I used to be an elementary school teacher. I just did the math wrong. Okay, we are looking for 8 more pledges in 5 minutes, and thank you if you've already given.
And we still have about 4.5 minutes to get those 8. So tell you what, if you haven't given, now's the time to give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And don't forget that added bonus. You're automatically entered in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. You'll have 5 chances to win.
Become a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Once you set up a comfortable monthly amount from your bank account or credit card, your support goes right to work towards the programming you appreciate.
And because your sustaining donation automatically renews every year, your support is always current. And that means that month after month, you're making important programs available to everybody. So become a sustainer right now. You're going to feel great about it. Give $10 or $20 a month, let's say, at WPR.org, or you can do it by phone at 888-202-2552. And it is easy.
It's very easy. All we need is your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay.
A $10 a month contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio works out to 33 cents a day. That's
a good deal.
That's the deal of the day. and it's a great value. You can make a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And I am sure that you're gonna get more than 33 cents worth of information and fun.
Absolutely. We are still looking for 8 more pledges. 8 more pledges. We have about 3 more minutes to get them. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And our added bonus, don't forget that, for supporting the programs you love, any amount of a pledge gets you entered into a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. You'll have 5 chances to win. So pledge right now. It doesn't matter if it's $5 or $5 a month or $10 a month, whatever the amount. Pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Jennifer from Minocqua says, love Larry's show. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Yes, and you can support the programs you value, and you can ask for the cool new WPR t-shirt when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's probably one of the easiest things you're going to do all day. It's convenient. It's easy. You just make ongoing monthly donations. And you could use either your bank account or your credit card. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We're going to have to go away here in a few seconds, but there's still time for you. We're down to 5. 5 more. 5 more contributions to reach our goal during this half hour. The way to do it is to go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Thanks if you've already contributed. If you haven't, there's still time in this half hour to do it. WPR.org.